Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Hour 2 of your Thursday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. You want to take part in the show, give us a call. 651-989-5855.
Got a quick one here. Comes out of Channel 5.
Okay.
Currently, MPRB leases out a restaurant building at Lake Calhoun to Tin Fish. The lease to the restaurant runs out December 3rd, so MPRB had offered Tin Fish a 15-year contract earlier this year. However, the owners declined, okay? So there could be a new food vendor possible at Lake Calhoun. I thought it was Bidet Makaska.
I know, right?
Okay.
Not just me. Thought we all agreed.
I thought we changed that now.
Lake Calhoun is a racist lake.
That's right.
So we got to rename it. But the media still calls it Lake Calhoun every story I see.
Well, then I'm classifying this a racist story.
Mm. Poor job, Channel 5. Yeah. Poor job.
I'm just glad that I was right in my assessment. Like, it was supposed to be Bidet Makaska. So we mentioned it earlier. The state's highest court has been weighing the case for months. After a lower court struck down Dayton's line item veto, the court said yesterday that it will issue its opinion at the untimely hour for us of 10 a.m.
Very inconvenient for us, so, Supreme Court.
Any guess?
No.
No guess. No stab.
I want to say I feel like that the news last week we covered with Senator Gazelka, that the Senate is going to have to start laying people off and issuing furloughs and things like that in December if the funding is not restored. I feel like that was I don't think the Supreme Court was going to do anything until something like that happened, until mm-hmm. some sort of timeline, a firm timeline and specifics were given of we've got X amount of money and we can pay our staff and we can pay our people for this amount of time and then we're going to have to start laying people off. That's when the constitutionality of Dayton's action really starts to have the impact, right?
Right,
right now, it's all sort of theoretical because they do have money to operate. Once they start running out of money, then we lose the functionality of a constitutional branch of government. That's going to compel the Supreme Court to act. So I feel like that's why we're getting the decision today. I'm inclined to believe that they will side with the legislature and that they will strike down the line item veto. And they will say the line item veto is indeed constitutional, but you can't use it to achieve an unconstitutional end, and that's what happened here. So they will strike it down and it'll be like it never happened.
Friend of the show Chad on Twitter says if they rule in Dayton's favor, they in fact will have turned the governor position into a dictatorship. Well, that'd be fun just for the stories. Here's the but you're I
No.
The more, like, look from a fascination standpoint, the more fascinating standpoint, and albeit then frustrating, would be if they actually ruled in Dayton's favor.
I know.
That's because
I have a hard time thinking the thought process that would land them there,
and unless it is simply a matter of. Unless it's a matter of nobody ever thought it was going to be used that way. Right? Mm-hmm. That's the only... It makes it awful because now you're going to be thrown into a circumstance where if the legislature holds firm, then think what the arguments are going to be. The arguments are going to be, well, Dayton had every right to do what you're doing. Why aren't you coming back and renegotiating with him? You guys are awful and terrible for allowing the money to run out and letting all these furloughs take place, right? That's what would end up happening. So the only argument that I could see to rule in Dayton's favor would be that it would be a mistake that the line item veto was put in there without any extra provisions. And that would throw us into a whole different controversy of having to go and change that in another way,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the only
the
way.
The legislature has to hold firm, though. They cannot, and I don't think they will.
They've given no
indication that they would, but they cannot give in to Dayton's temper tantrum, to Dayton's demands that they renegotiate items that were agreed upon in committee with the governor's staff involved, that the governor signed into law simply because he's going to take away their money if they don't. You can't let any governor, and I don't care if it's a GOP governor, I don't care. You cannot let any governor hold that lever over the legislature when it comes to negotiations, because that gives the governor essentially all the power. I mean, Chad called it a dictatorship. It's not quite that, but it does give him unprecedented and so much power over the legislature when it comes to negotiations. If you don't pass the bills that I want you to pass, fine. I'll just line item veto your funding.
And don't I'm not saying that you listening are, but don't misunderstand. Look, if the Minnesota Supreme Court rules in Dayton's favor, that's bad for Dayton, in my opinion, because to me it goes back to, and we talked about this originally when the whole thing erupted, and that is, nobody ever really thought that a governor would go the length that Dayton did. So if they end up ruling in Dayton's favor, meaning that that has to be changed because it does grant the governor that type of power, to me, that speaks to the horribleness of Governor Mark Dayton, that they put that ability in there in the first place under the assumption that no governor would ever take it that far. So why would it be necessary to have to put an extra provision in there?
The idea of the line item veto is to object to the amount of the appropriations given to any specific sort of bill or project or department or agency.
Right.
That's kind of the point behind it is, you know what? No, I don't want you to spend $54 million on this, you know, this pork project in this particular bill. So I'm going to line out and veto that, but the rest of it's fine. That's the extent of how it's supposed to be used.
And to me, one of the most frustrating aspects of this entire story is that we've lost sight. And at least not us collectively or you, but the media has lost sight of how we all ended up here in the first place. And that's what frustrates me, is that they had an agreement. I mean, let's go back to the beginning. An agreement was reached. The means and the argument that Governor Mark Dayton put forward were bogus. It was absolutely bogus. He agreed to it. They all compromised to measures that, for the most part, didn't even make all the conservatives happy. I got to bring that up again.
Oh, yeah.
There were plenty of individuals who thought, including myself, it was too bipartisan in a lot of ways. But also understanding there has to be some give and take. And Dayton agreed to it. And then he went, sorry.
Yep. I want these things gone.
And, yeah, protesting people and stuff.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry.
A bunch of people showed up outside my house with signs that hashtag veto everything. So, you know, I'm going to go ahead and take away your funding.
I hope, man. I hope that. We'll all see at the untimely hour of 10 a.m.
Brought it up yesterday. Don't forget, the biggest item that those activists were so upset about that were pressuring Dayton to hashtag veto everything was the teacher licensure standards.
Right.
That was it. I mean, so you can thank the teachers union. You can thank Education Minnesota for getting us where we are right now with this being in front of the Supreme Court.
But they do such a great job otherwise. So, you know, I mean, come on, let's be honest here.
Yeah. I'm sure all the parents in Edina agree.
651-989-5855. All right, coming up, we'll keep on the theme of Dayton, unfortunately. Dayton on sex harassment. I don't think people can prevent people from misbehaving, but there should be consequences.
That so goes against everything DFL typically stands.
Yeah, right?
If I just pass the right law, then people will stop doing all these things, right?
Plus, how did U.S. Representative Betty McCollum fight off one lawmaker's advances? We'll tell you next on Justice and Drew.
Justice and
we just got some real disturbing news here on Justice and Drew. Sam, too. 651-989-5855. Apparently, the future of emo passed away. Lil Peep.
Lil Peep died?
No, Lil Peep.
Lil Peep?
No, you're stop mocking the dead.
I don't know if his first name is Bo.
I'm not mocking. I'm very worried.
I don't, his first name might be Bo.
Lil Bo Peep.
No, there's a rapper, 21 years old, named Lil Peep.
But he's a future of emo?
No, I've heard him. I've never heard of this guy. I just happened to see on Twitter during the break that he died, 21. Sad news.
Very sad.
Up and coming, you know. Musician, apparently. Some outlets have called him a rapper, which might just be an assumption based upon his name.
Lil Peep, yeah.
But the other tweets that I saw described him as the future of emo.
Which made me sad, because I think emo needs a future. So now I'm wondering who's going to carry the mantle if he was the future of emo.
I think The door is open for you, Mike.
Oh, friend. I think that ship has sailed, sir.
The door is open.
Any musical career I might have had.
People in the radio industry talk a lot about how talk radio needs to evolve, right? Needs to be broader and things like that. Has there ever been an emo talk station?
I think. What would the conversation be like?
So we're sad again today.
Yeah. Have you ever heard my old show?
Let's just do emo talk.
Yeah.
So we'll carve out a whole new niche.
All right. I'll work on for the round table tomorrow.
Yeah.
All emo. I'll come up with some emo topics.
So what's causing you angst today?
That's right. What are you angst? Well, I went a little emo. We started the show this morning and my frustration over not getting my video game in a timely manner, which is still bothering me, but I'm not going to talk about it again right now.
The people that run the farm in Bloomington are probably feeling pretty emo right now.
True story.
Yeah, man. I bet they were planning out buying their private island and everything.
I want to take the shameless plug right now, though, but it works. The iHeartRadio app, okay? Because I found myself increasingly out of the loop when it comes to new music. Because I'm just not exposed to it like I used to. Mm-hmm. And it's just you end up with that distance from new music, and you kind of just find yourself in a loop of listening to the same stuff. So I've actually been taking to listening to playlists that are generated that expose me to new stuff that I've never heard before. And I'm really glad I did that because there's just a lot of great bands of music that I like, including emo style, mm-hmm. that I haven't been able to hear about. And I've been doing it on the iHeartRadio app. So I've encouraged somebody, if you haven't done that, it's a nice little exercise just to kind of get back into the routine.
That's my favorite part about the custom music stations, really. I mean, I like to do stations that have a lot of familiar music, but I also like it when you can just sort of pick a sort of a random song that maybe you just heard, and then that's a great way to discover new artists, new songs, new things you like.
Speaking of a new artist, next hour we do have an article out of Reason about one Taylor Swift that we'll dive into. I'm looking forward to this article. That's going to be fun. Did you see she went to a Target and surprised a bunch of fans?
Yes, I'm considering moving to Nashville now.
It's on my bucket list. I thought my bucket list now includes just meeting
moving to Nashville.
No, meeting Taylor Swift in public randomly at some point in time. That just sounds like fun.
Oh, it sounds like so much fun.
The bucket list usually has to be something that you can control.
Like, yeah.
you're choosing to do this.
Yeah.
Your bucket list is, I just hope this random occurrence happens.
Yeah, you know what? With a certain level of stalking, I can make it happen.
just bodyguards for that,
just,
buddy.
Just saying. I'm sure there was a little bit of a pre-announcement going on there with her showing up at Target. Or did she just pick a random Target and went?
I know a lot about this. It's a tradition every time she has a CD come out, she'll go to the wherever she happens to be, I guess. She'll go to the nearest Target unannounced.
Okay.
And go buy a copy of her CD.
All right, okay. Well, next record that comes out, I'll work on it. And then I'll let you know which Target it's going to be. And then we can go all together. Right. How's that work?
Sounds good to me.
All right. Coming out of the Pioneer Press, in his first public remarks, Drew, you can come too if you want. In his first public remarks.
Thanks, John.
If you only bring Drew, John.
Can I move to Nashville with you guys too?
Well, no, it won't be in Nashville next time. I already know that. So I already have a piece of the puzzle.
Are you psychic?
Well, no, she's already been there. She won't do the same place again.
No, she has a house there.
Oh. Can I get to the story over here?
Yeah.
All right. Out of a Pioneer Press.
Please.
In his first public remarks about the growing sexual harassment scandals sweeping through the Capitol, Governor Mark Dayton said yesterday that though sexual harassment is a pervasive problem through society, thanks, Dayton, there should be consequences, swift and consistent consequences.
Yeah, there should be.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there haven't been. And you know why there haven't been? Because your HR departments aren't doing anything about it.
Yeah.
And your leaders aren't doing anything about it. These are things that are handled internally. I mean, look, as far as I know, you know, and I'm not a lawyer, maybe lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien could chime in on this. Nothing criminal, you know, unless it gets to a certain point, right? There's no criminal aspect to this. This is all workplace consequences.
Right.
And the consequences need to be meted out by those in charge at the workplace. These complaints have been filed. They've gone through the proper channels. So the question is, you guys have to look internally and figure out why isn't anything happening about this.
Right. And look, if they don't fall under, if the complaints don't fall under a particular category that warrants any type of action against that individual, Then you need to go and look at, okay, well, then how do we address this beyond that? And almost like you have to go multiple layers. You know, people, and in this case, women need to be comfortable being able to bring their concerns to the forefront. They need to have an outlet to do that, and they do. But that certainly needs to happen, and those conversations with people need to happen a lot sooner when somebody's poor behavior is exposed. So this is not to, don't misunderstand, this is not to say that the latest allegation against State Senator Dan Schoen, that I'm being insensitive to that, okay? This is not to say that at all. But I will say that latest allegation that came out against State Senator Dan Schoen over the Snapchat of his private parts to the individual, to me, that is a very good circumstance where if there's enough people around Dan Schoen that know of his behavior and how he acts and the things that he does.
Sounds like there were.
Well, then people need to go and say something. Mm-hmm. And then that's not to say that if you knew about his activity and you didn't, that you are responsible for anything that happened. I'm not saying that. But I am saying that if we are going to do something about this on a societal level, going back to making sure you have those conversations with those around you, being more active in your community, then that also means that on occasion, it's okay to stop and go, dude, you know, you just can't do that.
Intervene.
Yes.
Stop tolerating these types of behaviors. Stop shrugging your shoulders and saying, that's just how he is. And stop pulling people aside and warning them. You know, you probably don't want to. Don't spend alone time with this guy because he's kind of, you know, he's got a tendency to act inappropriate. Stop all that. Call it out. Intervene and get the behavior to stop. And if it doesn't, then you need to figure out how you're going to purge this guy from wherever it is that he's working, whether it be the legislature or your local office, whatever.
Tell the Todd Packers of the world to knock it off.
Right.
Well, it's funny, too, because we've been rewatching the offices of late, and you go back to, like, 2005, and it's interesting, even when you go back and watch The Office now, because you go, okay, the standards have even changed on television, because they wouldn't allow most of these jokes to even take place anymore. And so, if it can change in that respect, if we can, you know, 10 years down the line, look back at a show like The Office, okay, and I personally think that we can be responsible adults to understand comedy and work through the comedy. But I also understand, too, that times do change. And jokes made on The Office back then, or going back further like Seinfeld, probably won't take place as they won't be as prevalent as they used to be. But if that's the case, then this type of activity can also be put to a stop if we haven't caught up in society and we haven't been more vocal about this type of, not just physical abuse, obviously, because the physical abuse should never happen. And if that ever takes place, somebody needs to report it immediately. But that verbal abuse takes place, we need to be way, way more forthright in calling it out up front. Before you have a circumstance like this and then suddenly all these allegations come out and you've got all these stories of, well, that's how they are. We've known it for years.
651-989-5855. Mark Dayton did make some more comments. And I want, there's a couple of points that he made here that I want to hone in on about this, because I think the way that he phrases some of these things is part of the problem and part of the reason that these types of behaviors become sort of endemic and systemic throughout organizations.
Plus, you have U.S. Representative Betty McCollum says she once fended off a lawmaker's advance with a rolled up newspaper. That didn't, you beat somebody with, I'm not saying that she didn't have the right to, I'm saying, but you went so far as to beat somebody with a newspaper to fend off their advance. Was there a complaint filed, or was that the end of that? We'll give you all the details coming up.
Miss any?
Justice and Drew, along with Sam here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Hashtag TCNT on Twitter if you want to tell me how bad my taste in music is. I like an eclectic mix.
I prefer to tell you that in person.
You can't be, it's not like that.
It's all subjective.
It is all subjective. Thank you very much. 651.
The people I like are very popular, so clearly a lot of people like them as well.
That's not an argument that I'm using. I don't really care if a lot of people like them or not. I'm just saying it is very subjective. It's not. I don't, you know, I don't particularly like Drew's bland of music.
Bland of music.
But I wouldn't sit back and say that he has bad taste in music. He just has much different taste in music. That's all. All right, let's go here. We'll get back to Governor Mark Dayton here in just a moment. Out of Channel 5, we asked him to resign, and what we received is really his lawyer and attorney suggesting that he is not going to resign and that he has been retained to fight any potential ethics complaints that come forward. DFL leaders say that they've asked State Senator Dan Schoen to resign, but there's no way to force him out. If he did what the victims say he did, okay, then a recommendation will be given to the full body who has the ability and a two-thirds vote to expel the senator from the Minnesota Senate, according to Hayden. So Hayden said there is no process to place Schoen on paid administrative leave. However, he does not... He hopes he does not return for work in the Senate office building. We would hope that Senator Schoen would not come back to work because we want to create a safe environment for our workers. I don't think that could happen if Senator Schoen comes back to work. I don't want to open up a huge can of worms here, and we'll get back to Governor Mark Dayton and his comments yesterday on sexual harassment. But should there be a better way to remove people from office? And I know we have all the reasons that we have in place for a reason, and these circumstances don't come across very often. I've seen other circumstances, not of the sexual harassment in nature, but just more of the sort of corruption in nature.
That's the thing. When there's criminal behavior involved,
right,
there are processes in place.
Right.
When it's just inappropriate, disgusting,
right,
at times,
right,
violating workplace code type behavior.
Exactly. That's where it's
really, really tricky. That's really, really tough. And I'm going to say for right now, no, I don't think that there should be a process to take away somebody's election certificate, to remove somebody in office from office that the people voted there when there's not criminal behavior involved.
Right.
And I know this is kind of, you know, kind of gross, and this behavior that is being alleged here is really disgusting and really inappropriate and should never, ever, ever, ever happen. But you know, there's got to be some degree of due process involved.
Mm-hmm.
If you're gonna mete out circumstances that extreme as removing an elected official from an office, there's got to be some sort of due process involved. They've got to have the opportunity to defend themselves, opportunity to plead their side of the case. It can't just be because, you know, somebody made an allegation and a bunch of other people are like, ooh, gross, I don't want to work with this person anymore.
And it's important to remember kind of how we got here. I know that some of these, when you look at State Senator Dan Schoen, some of them are more recent than others, or Representative Tony Cornish. Look, there was a level of acceptance going on in this case inside the Minnesota State Legislature where these things weren't being brought to light. Then you have the national story of Harvey Weinscum. And again, through various different reasons, and we think, you know, in no small part because of President Trump getting elected and people being more forthright with their, you know, with their complaints against people. Whereas before, you've seen celebrities who have done horrible things, but it hasn't brought about the level of transparency that we're suddenly seeing now. We do have a process in place. I think the question right now is, at least in my mind, has the process been failing, or has the process been doing a pretty good job of weeding these people out? It's just that the complaints haven't been coming forward the way that they should have. That's the question I don't know yet. Because like in the case of Senator Dan Schoen, with the latest allegation of the photo that he sent, and that was a number of years ago, if I'm not mistaken, and the initial, from when it happened, the person who now brought forward the allegation says, well, when it happened, I just blew it off. It didn't really bother me. I didn't feel in danger. But now that all these other things have come out, I've decided to, oh, well, there's obviously a pattern of behavior. And I don't disagree, but at the same time, I do stop and I go, well, wait a second. How does the pattern of behavior that you see now change the fact that when it initially happened, you brushed it off?
How did it become a pattern? How did it become a pattern of behavior?
Ding, ding.
Because, and I'm not trying to, you know, make them I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus that may have received an explicit picture and not done anything about it. But this is when you talk about the things that need to change, the cultures that need to change, that is a part of it, of just sort of shrugging your shoulders and tolerating that type of behavior. It doesn't become a pattern until it's happened a number of times and not been called out.
And maybe you have to go through circumstances like this to get to where we are now, you know? And again, to the accusation of him sending the photo and the initial brush it off and then seeing that it ended up being a pattern of behavior, being who I am and not having me put in that position, I can't imagine what that must have been like for that individual. But I can stop down and go, well, you know what? If I brushed it off because I didn't think that it was a larger issue, and yet it seems as if this person has been perhaps assaulting other women, then maybe it's important that I bring about what happened to me to make sure that something is remedied. Like, maybe if you think that Dan Schoen was going to get away with what he was doing, you feel that it's important for you to go, well, wait a second, I need to go ahead and mention this now where I didn't initially, because I think it's important to add some more evidence to this. Look, Roy Moore, same thing. It's easy for Roy Moore to brush off an allegation that took place 30 years ago if it's one, right? Mm-hmm. It's easy for that to be refuted, have that person come out and say, have other individuals come out and say, oh, well, the person that's making these claims worked for the Clinton administration and donated to Democrats and all that. It's a much different story when you got, oh, okay, that may be the case, but we also have this example, and now we have this example, and now we have this example.
And I get frustrated. I'm looking at this story from the Pioneer Press with Dayton's comments yesterday. The very end of the story, very last sentence of the story, in response to a reporter's question, he said he's not aware of any allegations against any other lawmakers. He's lying. Because there are stories after story after story that have been circulated amongst these circles and amongst these people for a long, long time. I've had people come to me with rumors and gossip and, you know, and float names. Oh, this name might come out next, or this name might come out next. If it's getting to me, it's certainly getting to Mark Dayton.
Oh, yeah. Out of the Star Tribune today. And when one recent roll call survey, 4 out of 10 female congressional staffers reported that they'd been harassed on the job. There are rumors of a doing that thing with my fingers creep list circulating to warn female staffers to stay away from certain members and staffers. So,
are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah. McCollum said, she said, women have been navigating around workplace predators in the public and private sector for years.
There was a story from Lori Halverson earlier this week where she said that she's been sexually harassed by members of both parties a number of times, and she didn't want to name any names, which frustrates me. Didn't want to name any names in the story because I've got to work with these people, and if I start naming names, it's going to come back on me. That's a terrible, terrible way to go about this.
But maybe you won't have to work with them because if they're doing those things, then they shouldn't be there anyway.
Right. Exactly. And that's back to the point about Governor Dayton saying he's not aware of any, you know, Lori Halverson, I'm sure, has named names to her confidants and to friends of hers, and I'm sure those things have been gossiped and circulated about.
Right.
People know who these people are. People know the creeps. People know the ones that you shouldn't be alone with if you're a young female staffer or a young freshman female legislator of some sort. People know who those people are. Start calling them out.
And there's been a standard that's been put forward, and this is the part of it where, because I was thinking, okay, so one, it's important to make sure that when these things happen, they're reported to the proper individuals so that they can be remedied. That's the case, right? We've talked about that. I wish that these circumstances were taking place on a one-on-one level between two individuals, because that's the best opportunity you have to remedy a situation, and it's the best opportunity you have to have somebody realize that their behavior is bugging somebody else. But the standards are there. We've all taken those. And when we take it, we always go, oh, this is ridiculous. But those harassment training videos that we all have to go through, right? You take them and you work through them and you go, okay, well, and for me, mentally, I go, well, who doesn't realize this? Who doesn't know this already, right?
You go through those things and it's like you roll your eyes, but clearly some people need to.
Clearly you guys aren't the ones that need it.
Right.
Thankfully.
Some people do.
Right. Right.
Right.
And so when we talk about set standards, there are set standards. Those videos give you even the most nuanced circumstances to let people know. I mean, because that's what ends up making those videos kind of funny, is we watch them and go, well, that's just ridiculous. But people don't know.
They use kind of extreme.
And they use the extreme circumstances. And so if you have a set standard in place, that's keeps a pretty tight box on what sexual harassment is in the workplace, then it seems to me there should be more people coming forward and calling it out when it happens and less brushing it off. And that's not, again, putting the onus right on accusers in any way, shape, or form.
And I can, you know, I can get on board with having maybe some more stringent consequences for those that have actually engaged in sexual harassment. But it's that borderline behavior. It's that behavior that's just kind of creepy. It just kind of maybe makes the woman uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But doesn't necessarily cross that threshold into sexual harassment. That's the type of behavior that I think needs to be called out immediately, needs to be told is inappropriate, needs to be told to stop.
That's a lot easier said than done.
I understand.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier said than done, because a lot of times, speaking as a young woman who's worked around, I mean, older guys and everything, there's times where I'll be talking to somebody and you get that creeper vibe, but you don't know if it's just you, mm-hmm. or you don't know if you're being overly sensitive or if you're being judgy or whatever. There's a lot of self-doubt that comes with that. So unless they cross that line and it's like, okay, I have like this list of things that I know are not okay, then you know that you should come forward with something. But if it's just kind of like a gray, like I kind of just feel a little gross around this person and I don't want to be around them, that doesn't necessarily always, like at least to me, constitute, okay, I need to go to this entity. I need to go talk to this person. Because like you don't want to be that person that blows something up out of proportion just because you might have taken something the wrong way.
You got a weird vibe off somebody.
Yeah, just because you had a weird vibe.
That's not an actionable offense.
Right. So it's super easy to say, like, okay, I had this creepy feeling from this person. That's really easy to say, and maybe it's just you. But if there's a dozen other women who had that same creepy feeling, and a dozen more other women who actually got assaulted by that person,
right?
But you don't know about it until it comes out, and that's when you get more, these other allegations that just come piling on.
Well, and that's we talked about this. I know this is a bad example because one's not the other, but we talked about this when it came to that horrible shooting that took place in Texas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that there were all these warning signs of this individual, but people don't make the jump to, oh, he could grab a bunch of weapons and go and murder 26 people.
Yeah.
Right? So if you're around somebody in the workplace, I imagine, and you spend a lot of time with them and they've kind of developed a pattern of behavior that doesn't make you totally cringe, but it's not really all that comfortable, you're not making the logical jump that could lead to, or perhaps they actually have gotten physical with people.
Right, right. Well, I have a habit of just assuming the very best in people. There's people that I have interacted with and everything that in a professional setting that just like casually, just when they're talking to women, maybe just speak a little bit differently to women than they do to other men. That I'm not necessarily going to completely blow that up into something unless I hear about them doing things like what some of these legislators are doing.
Right. Well, and that's the big difference between the allegations against somebody like State Senator Dan Schoen and the allegations against what we know of Representative Tony Cornish,
mm-hmm.
right? Especially when you go and look at that thread between he and May Quaid, right? In that thread when he makes the comment of, oh, you look hot, I couldn't take your eyes off of you, you know, maybe I shouldn't be saying that. And she makes the comment, and again, I'm just kind of paraphrasing, of the, well, you probably should start now, exclamation point.
I need to be more gentlemanly.
Yeah.
She was like, well, start now.
Start now. And then through the rest of the thread, he does.
Yeah, after that, he was more respectful.
And she probably mentally wasn't making the leap, and we haven't heard, at least I don't know, there's been some allegations that he may have gotten physical with somebody, but no evidence.
Obvious,
with no evidence of that. But she probably at the time never made the jump that he could possibly get physical with somebody. And I would imagine maybe something similar as we work through this when it comes to the latest allegations against State Senator Dan Schoen. Sending pictures is a different realm. Right, altogether.
Completely different.
Right. Certainly would warrant
without an election certificate, that's a fireable offense.
Yeah,
right.
That absolutely should be a, oh, you did that to a coworker unsolicited? Sorry, you're out.
Super inappropriate.
But maybe they had developed a relationship where she goes, well, he said weird things before, so I'll let it slide. Not thinking that, well, maybe he's actually gone so far as to physically touch somebody.
I don't know. If somebody sends a picture like that, red flag. Red flag. Red flag. That's like red flag central.
Here's a hint. Right. If you get that picture, you're not the first woman that that guy sent that to.
It's and I just feel like you have to. You
it's
have
the
to
deserted
be,
road again.
It's just like you have to be so dumb to send a picture like that.
It's that guy that drives the deserted road every single day, right? And he speeds and he speeds and he speeds. The one time the cop shows up, pulls him over. Probably not the first time he was speeding.
Exactly.
And I have to be honest with you. Like, I don't know of any woman that this has come up in a conversation with, at least. And I don't talk about things like this with women a lot. But conversations where pictures like this have come up, I don't know of any woman who hasn't received an unsolicited photo like that.
Oh, that's stunning to me.
What?
Of all men, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, seriously.
Thank you.
You don't know any woman that hasn't...
Like, at least that it's come up in conversation with.
That's crazy.
I just...
What a world.
I know. That's just strange to beyond... And the fact that you don't know anybody that hasn't.
Yeah.
Have they ever brought it up to anybody else, or is it?
The situations that I'm thinking of is just where it's come up in conversation with people. And a lot of times, honestly, a lot of times it's from, like, random phone numbers or random people on, like, social media that you're not even, you don't know, you're not connected with. So it's just, like, random creepy accounts. So it's not necessarily... like a personal violation or experience of someone that you were close to or know.
651.
Social media needs an algorithm that can identify this picture and, like, when somebody tries to send it, be like, nope.
It shouldn't be that hard.
I hate it.
We're not going to send that for you.
I hate to have the job of having to develop that algorithm.
I believe that's a running bit on Silicon Valley this past season.
651-989-5855. We will tell you, we're late on it, we will tell you the GOP leaders and their drastic plan to save the Alabama seat and the most unlikeliest of pairings to run against President Donald Trump in 2020. Justice in